entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Gills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good morning. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. I'm Marsha. This is the Marshaverse. See the sign? That's how you know. Anyway, tonight we have a really, really good show. I am so looking forward to it. We have a special guest, a woman I met years ago when I was first coming back into doing stand-up. And I went to her show, and she was very gracious and nice, and she also extended that grace to tonight and has agreed to be with us here. So look forward to meeting and talking to Lonnie Love in just a moment. But first, ta-da, we're going to do our cannabis and cognac segment. This is the part of the show where I tell you what I'm drinking to chill. This one night a week we set aside to hang out with friends late night, chill out, drink a little bit, smoke a little bit, and talk a little smack. So tonight, I have a little different, rather than just a straight up cognac. I'm having a cocktail made with, I don't know what this brand is, but I saw it and so I bought it. It's ABK6. And so I decided to mix it with a little Kahlua. This monkey ain't open. A little Kahlua. This is going to be a really good show. Marsha try to open the fucking bottle. And a little. No, I don't have any Kahlua at all. I have coffee. There we go. I have coffee, a little Bailey's, and some chocolate liqueur. It's called Mozart. And so I'm going to add a little cognac. Okay, that's enough. Just a little something. Stir that up. And we drink it out of mason jar because we country. It tastes pretty good. Anyway, and I'm smoking on this is a Heavy Hitters Strawberry Cough. Heavy Hitters Strawberry Cough in a church battery. I like these batteries. And so there we go. We turn it on. Oh, yeah, baby. Now we're ready to do this. Last week, we talked about the commercials that used to air on black shows in the 70s. And a young man named Garrison Hayes had made a video saying they seem kind of hokey now. And so we talked about how people were critical of them at the time, but they were very progressive. And we also talked about the fact that they were made by a black advertising agency, the Burrell Agency. And while some people nowadays take issue with them, the people who were involved in making the show, Mr. Burrell included, are very proud of them. They're proud of the fact that they were pioneers in the advertising industry for targeting black audiences. That had not happened before the 70s. And they aired, you know, there weren't a lot of black shows for them to air on. And so primarily we remember them from Soul Train. And Soul Train featured them and also faced a lot of criticism. Don Cornelius famously addressed them in a video.
How do you handle the criticism some blacks make that shows of this nature should do more than just entertain and you're not living up to the purposes and the goals of the wider adventures blacks should be pursuing?
Well, I could say that I resent those kinds of comments, but I'm just not into criticizing other black people. I think that's the most sinful thing a black person can do. And in regard to a black person who would raise one finger about something as harmless as Soul Train with all of the evils and all of the oppression and all of the disparity that exists in this country, is more than misguided, but because I love black people so much, I'll use the term misguided, and I'll let you use your imagination to say what I think of a person who wastes time criticizing what black people are doing instead of spending his time trying to help black people in the way that he knows best.
A lot of people don't know that most black performers, in some way or another, harken back to older performers who didn't always get their due, and older traditions that don't always get respect. And Soul Train is no exception. The Soul Train Lion, which was the premier feature of the show, besides the musical guests and the dancers, and the Soul Train Lion was said to be, at that time, modern adaptation of the Cakewalk. Cakewalk started during slavery, and their history gets muddied by people who don't really understand. They began as mockery. Enslaved people thought that the dances that the hoity-toity did, the whatever, they were too formal and they were just stupid. They didn't have any soul. And so they would get dressed up when they had free time and mock them and compete over who could mock them the best. And the winner would win a small prize, usually a small baked good. They would take the cake. And so that's how they became known as cakewalks. And slave owners, the people who had the audacity to think they could own other people. Anyway, they thought of their enslaved workers as less than human. They thought of them almost as pets. And so when they saw their pets making fun of them, they thought it was cute, like you think it's cute if your dog sings along to a commercial. And so they began to basically hold up treats and make people perform those dances for them. And so they became a staple at every party, big to-do, and they would have these elaborate cakewalks. When minstrelsy came into being, which it started in the North, a lot of people get confused that it's a Southern tradition. It started in the North, and cakewalks became a staple of minstrel shows. And that lasted all the way up until the 60s. So when Don Cornelius did a callback, because black performers doing cakewalks were different during minstrelsy and burlesque, and Pert Williams was well known for his cakewalks and the traditions from the plays and shows put on by black performers really showed up and showed out. And so he brought that back in a way, a competition, but not to mock anybody, but to show off. And a lot of people missed that. And some who didn't miss it didn't like it. I think time has shown that Don was right, that that celebration, that reclamation of black culture was not only the right thing to do, it was a major step forward as we were coming into the Black Power era, out of the Civil Rights era, and expanding our presence everywhere. And so that's my comediosophy moment. And right now, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. Midnight in the Marshaverse is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings new Imitation of Life Chocolate Pancake Mix. Aunt Karen knows that you long for the pre-woke good old days when families could enjoy a quick, healthy breakfast in a hurry with the help of pre-made pancake mix in a box. Back when the comforting image of a large black woman's smiling face started the whole nuclear family's day off right. That's why Aunt Karen is proud to present her new comfort food line, Reclaimed Entitlement. Her Suburban Seasonings new Imitation of Life chocolate pancake mix turns tradition on its head with a delicious reverse recipe for chocolate pancakes in a white face box. served with her traditionally bland plain vanilla syrup, canned milk with Bosco, dried fruit, and scrapple, you can send your 2.5 kids and bread-winning hubby out to the minivan in a sugar rush of energy with a renewed sense of purpose and their rightful place atop the food chain. With this new Caucasity product line, Aunt Karen reverses Claudette Colbert's 1939 movie mistake of partnering with her subservient pancake recipe creator and keeps the reverse recipe for herself, adapting it to the taste of suburban nuclear families everywhere and doing her part to make America white, great again, one pancake at a time. I get so excited when I can bring on people who I admire, people who have made a name for themselves in this business, who have just done the damn thing and still doing it. In fact, I wasn't sure she's going to show up. She's so damn busy. She was like working right before she got here. So let's welcome her and give her that good old Midnight in the Marshaverse welcome. Please say hello to my friend Lonnie Love. Hey girl, how you doing?
You know what? I could stop anytime for the legendary Marsha Warfield. First of all, thank you for that opening. Thank you for, you know, giving us, because you know what's happening in this country as far as history. They're trying to take it away from us. And it's up to us to make sure that we make sure that we pass it on to generations. So I really enjoyed that. I could have listened to that for another hour. You explaining that stuff. So how you doing, Miss Warfield?
I'm fine. Call me Marsha and don't encourage me. I might talk for an hour on that. I am so fascinated with how we have pushed the narrative away from what it was designed to be, which was to make fun of Black people. That's the foundation of American show business, making fun of Black people. And then it expanded to making fun of other immigrants. I mean, burlesque, they made fun of everybody. And so to come to where we are not just the propaganda arm for white supremacy anymore, we are the counter and the advocates for just basic representation. And so I'm so happy to have seen it happen.
But we needed that though, Marsha, because the thing is that, you know, at one time in order to segregate, I mean, you know this, is that entertainers are the ones that segregated this country. And a lot of people wanted to say, oh, back in those days, they were shucking and jiving. But we would not have had integration if it hadn't been for the Black performers, because the Black performers are the ones that actually, for some white people, that's the first time they seen somebody. I mean, when we did my show, The Real, that came on, you know, it was like, the reason why I wanted to do a talk show was to show the Midwest, we just like y'all. I mean, you know what I mean? We just like y'all. We had the same problems. We had the same issues. We just like y'all. So, you know, it's like, so entertainment has always been that catalyst for integration, you know, especially in making change, you know.
I agree with that, but I think we need to really make the case that, for one thing, everything we've learned about ourselves through this media has been filtered through a white gaze. And so we get indoctrinated with our own oppression. And so we don't tell the story. It's like the facts are the facts, but the story can be told from the point of view of people. We were not allowed in spaces, in white spaces as a rule. So we had to form a parallel show business that was on the level, the traveling through the South, across the country, through the back roads and boarding houses with the Green Book, that came to be known as the Chitlin' Circuit, but it was a parallel circuit that that Black performers worked on. And it was they and the people who came to see them. A lot of times these shows happened at the junction of the railroad track. So on one side of the railroad track, the Black people couldn't pass and the white people on this side. And so they would have a little roadhouse at the junction of it. And everybody would come. And so shows with people would come in, and the kids started sneaking over. And different ethnic groups started wanting to play in the band. And everybody just wanted to jam and have fun. And so they did. And this country fought it every step of the way. And
but you know, does. Entertainment. I mean, Motown, I'm from Motown. So I know the stories of, you know, Smokey Robinson and Diana Ross. And when they would take a whole busload of all of them, you know, down south. And at one point they had, like you said, it started in the junction. Then they finally let them in the theater. But you had the Blacks on one side, you had the whites on one side. And then eventually them kids was like, we just want to dance.
Okay. And they did. And so Little Richard, even the blues singers, the so many people. But how did you get started in this business?
I got started in college. I started doing stand-up in college, and I got my engineering degree. I'm an engineer. I worked for Xerox for 8 years. Okay. I was the worst 8 years of my life. I was unhappy. I didn't want to be there. I was taking naps. I had a George Foreman grill in my cubicle. I was doing all kinds of stuff to get fired. But since I was the only Black one, they said, let's keep her. We just got to work with her. And I was like, I'm just not happy here. I had a boyfriend at the time, a college sweetheart. I didn't want to be, because, you know, you get a job like Xerox, you have dental benefits. That was the big thing back then, you know. Okay. And they were like, it was at a certain point where he wanted to get married. I didn't. And then one day I went to the Comedy Store because I was working out here. And I'll never forget. I saw about 8 guys perform, and I saw only 1 female. And I had been doing stand-up in college just, you know, as a side thing. And I thought to myself, why aren't there more females? And I started researching. And once I started researching, you know, I saw the rich history. I saw I saw Moms Mabley. I saw, you know, there weren't a lot of Black females, LaWanda Page. Right. But I was like, wow, there's not a lot. And so basically, make a long story short, there was a layoff in my job one day. I found that as a way to get out. I told my boss, save a job, lay me off. That was in 2002, and I've been working ever since. And one of the highlights of my career was I had a residency out at Venetian, and after my show, the one and only Marsha Warfield was there. And I grew up studying her. I watched her, you know, on Night Court. I remember studying her on the Richard Pryor show and the history. And as a comic, I just want the viewers and the listeners to know, as a comic, to be surprised to have a legendary, not only comic, but also female comic that has paved the way for me. It was the best honor that I could have. And so I just want to say thank you and, you know, continued success. You know?
Thank you so much. You know what? I had not been out the house in 20 years. I had not had any contact with show business. I had to get my courage up to let you know I was there, because in my head, nobody was going to remember me. It had been 20 years since I started working. So I wasn't sure, and I came by myself, and I wasn't sure that I'd even be able to get backstage. And so I was very grateful and very happy to have that first encounter be like that. And thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. And that's why I appreciate you being here.
It's my honor. It's my pleasure and my honor. So to be in the Marshaverse.
Come on. Here in the Marshaverse. And now you can tell me to mind my own business. We can cut it out if you want to. But I understand you lost your mom recently.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me about her.
Oh, Mama Love was a hoot. I think that's where I got most of my This is where I got most of my humor from, was her. She was one of the women, you know, she was raised out of Alabama, drink, you know, fight. She was just real. And so, you know, when she passed, this was the interesting thing. When she passed, she had everything already taken care of. So I explain this to anybody. As we get older, and if you have parents that are getting older, I know it's a hard conversation, but you have to have things together, because it basically, she knows my schedule. You know, she passed on a Tuesday. She knew when to pass because I had to go filming the week after. So she passed on that Tuesday. I was able to fly in, take care of her condo, get everything. She had everything in order. It's like she knew. And so I tell this to people. I said, please have that conversation. If you have elderly parents, elderly siblings, have the conversation, understand what their wishes are. And, you know, the only thing is that because of the talk show, people knew about her. So I had to keep it secret for a couple of days, because her wishes was that she wanted to be cremated and she wanted to be on the lake, throughout on the lake in Michigan. And I was like, but, you know, she has one sister that's still with us and she's very religious. And so when I got the call, I was like, I have to do everything that my mom wanted, and then I need to tell the family. But I needed to hurry up because there were people that were in her condo that know me, and I didn't want them to go to the press and all this other kind of stuff. So it's like you're under that type of pressure where you're trying to make sure you take care of her wishes. You got to take care of her stuff. You got to get her paperwork. And then you have to tell the family. But the way it was handled, it was all because we had a plan. We knew it was going to happen. So if anything that if there's any message I can give to the people, make sure you have a plan. Make sure you have a plan.
You know? It sounds like an amazing person to have done that and to have instilled that in you and left you with a smile. That's kind of rare.
A little money too, so I was like, thank you.
Well, okay, that's always a bonus. What you drinking though?
This is a cognac, but I don't know the name of it. It's a little cognac, my little nightcap. I said, well, if I'm gonna come to the Marsha verse, let me come with my cognac.
Yeah, you know, when I do a little of this, we featured Whoopi's line, you know, she got a new line in cannabis, Whoop Fam, and last week she gave us this thing. This.
Whoa.
Okay. And it's called a Zenko. And she has her own brand of Zenko. And you know, I have to show it off because it is so cool. Okay.
This is so cool. You're smoking in here?
Watch me now. Well, come on now. Then you take this off.
Oh.
Or you can take a straw. You know, if you want to share with people, you get everybody their own straw. Share. You can share. And so this is like the coolest gift I've ever gotten.
That's amazing.
Everybody, you know, I could talk to you all day. You got, besides the podcast coming up, you got another show you're doing, another podcast. Mm-hmm. You're working on something now. What else is on your plate?
I mean, you know, right now we're pitching. So I'm pitching different shows. I've gotten a green light for a BET show. I'm pitching another daytime talk show. I have a new podcast, Grown Women Talking. Right now it's the season of rebirth for me. And that's all it is. It's just, you know, I did a talk show for 9 seasons. It was a great moment. But now I'm getting back into comedy. I'm going out on tour with Martin Lawrence and I'm doing my own headlining tours. You can find out everything I'm doing on LonnieLove.com. But more importantly, I'm here in the Marshaverse. That's what's important.
I had a talk show for about 9 minutes, and so I can't really relate, but
you can tell you're doing very well, and it's a very interesting topic that you bring up, and it's you. You know, people want to know you, and they want authenticity, and that's what you're giving them. So just keep doing that.
That's one thing I found out. You can't fail at being you. If you set being you as your goal, you can only succeed. And so I try to set myself up for success. But
you know what I love the most about you, and then I know we got to move on, is when it was the Richard Pryor show, and he was the president, and you stood up, and you asked him the question. And before you, I know you get it all the time, but I got to, because for the youngins that don't understand how legendary, when you said Jet Magazine, I was like.
Richard saluted, because I was, here again, I'm terrified. I'm 23 years old. I'm on the Richard Pryor show. Richard is hotter than God at the moment, at that moment. And he gave me, he treated me like a real comedian. And so I'm over my head. You know, and I stand up and I'm trying to figure out how to do this. I've never acted, never studied, don't know nothing about it. And I said, them church ladies who came always did the announcements, when they would stand up and say their names, they were very clipped and clear. And so I was Roberta Davies, Magazine. I have a question. And he said, and I was okay, but I was all a fluttering.
Applause break. It was an applause break. It's memorable to have that culture, to know that you have that history. That's why we do all of this, Marsha. You know that. So
it's a continuum, and hopefully, and not just hopefully, you were mentioning the ladies who came before us, and we also mentioned the minstrel. Lady Ada Overton Walker, who is the first Black woman we know of as a stand-up by name. Because, you know, when they say certain people took jobs if they wanted to work, we had to take certain jobs if we wanted to work. We always leave off a key phrase, and that's, we had to take those jobs if we wanted to work for white people. We didn't have to take those jobs because there was an alternate circuit. It was not as glamorous, it was not as lucrative, but there were people who worked that circuit that we don't even know. And I always want to find the people who said no, who said, I don't want it at that cost, and who did something else. And they're the ones who changed ultimately the culture. The go along, to get along serves a purpose, but it wasn't nearly the purpose of the people who said, now we're going to do this way, and made it work for them. And I feel sorry for the ones who said, I'm not going to do it, and bottled up their dreams and went and taught music in grammar school. You know, yeah, we need them, but we lost so much because they didn't have the opportunities that should have been available to all of us. So anyway, before I get too wrapped up in my professorial cloak,
I love it.
I want to ask you a question. If you have a moment, my sons love you and would love to say hello to you. My comedy sons, they're going to introduce them and let them say hi. Is that all right?
Of course.
All right, so here we go. Right now, I'm going to bring out my two sons. Da-na-na-na. Anyway, my youngest son, my problem child, my baby boy. I love him madly, and we're going to introduce him first this week. He has his own show at Jimmy Kimmel's on Friday nights, Show Those Skills. And he's here tonight being his inimitable self. Say hello to Skills Hudson.
I know Skills. What's up?
Oh, I had an excited Lottie on the show.
Oh man.
I was okay. So happy because not only hey mom.
Before you get into it, let's bring your brother out and then
we okay.
This is my oldest son, the one who looks the most like me. And he is the producer of my Book of Marsha One Woman show. And he's worked, he just did a skills show. Show those skills. He works at the LA Comedy Club, works all around Vegas. Please welcome Stephen Roberts.
Stephen!
Hey, honey. Oh my God. Honey, look. Oh my God.
See?
I
have a second thought about
being on so
right. It's a love fest. Okay, skills. You were
What I was going to say is, just like the homage, like she was saying to you, and you already know how I feel about you, Mom. But Lonnie, like when I was a new comic, man, it was you are a part of my story when I tell comics, when they be asking me my advice and stuff. And your name, Melanie Camacho, Leslie Jones, Dominique, Lunel, you guys, you know, come up because Black women, y'all was so what I seen with my own eyes, and I was, you know, it was funny comics out there, but I've seen y'all in the midst of all these, you know, so-called all giants and stuff, and I would watch y'all, and then y'all were the ones that gave me opportunities. You were the first one that let me open for you at 5 minutes at Ontario Improv. This is over 11, 12 years ago, you know what I'm saying? At Ontario Improv. Thank you, famo.
You're doing well. I'm like, Skills got a show in Vegas. When you go to Vegas?
He do. It's and he's how long has it been, Skills?
I just celebrated my year anniversary 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Congratulations. That is wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, famo.
Ain't a whole lot of us who can say that.
Okay.
And so and in fact, that's how I found my sons was when I was doing at the LA Comedy Club at 10:30 on Wednesday and Thursday or something, but just working it out. And so I met my oldest son, and I know he wants to tell you something because he always does. So Stephen, what do you want to tell Lonnie?
Hi. Okay. So here's my thing. I knew you, I loved you, but when you started doing RuPaul's shows, not only were you fucking amazing, but you, and this is how I feel about women in general. Women have always been the bridge from LGBTQ communities to the rest of the world because women have always had the guts, they've always had the tenacity. They've always had the courage just to tell it like it is. And you guys are so important. But beyond that, there's so much love and there's so much belief in drag queens and queer comics and all of that. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You are so important to
Oh, you know, I love my gays. My gays, they show
I know you do. I know you do.
And all of that. So it's just, you know, but yeah, we're all in the community together. So, and that whole RuPaul's Drag Race came out of COVID because they didn't, you know, they had to have only certain amount of people. So for that one particular season, I was on like 4 or 5 times and it was just awesome. And I love RuPaul. He's been on my show many times. And, you know, I just think that, you know, we are all marginalized people. So I believe that we should all work together. And it's just, you know, it's just great. So thank you, Steve.
And what you did on Celebrity Drag Race and how you opened yourself up. And
oh, my God. That's the hardest. You've been wondering why they always crying on Drag Race. Because emotional. It really, you know, especially when RuPaul put up that picture, look at your 5-year-old self. Tell me what you think. You're like, I was hungry, baby. Yeah. It's great, though. It's really
well,
good.
Well, Lonnie, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I so appreciate you being here. We could talk for another 2 hours. I know that we just barely scratched the surface. But thank you. You're welcome to come back anytime. And thank we love you and appreciate you and wish you all the best in the world. Thank you
for the time. I appreciate all of y'all. And Skills, I'm going to see you in Vegas. Coming now. I know you got a room. Okay. Now I need 5 minutes. Okay.
Anytime, Famo.
All right. Good night.
All right.
All right. Wasn't that great?
Yes.
We've been doing really good. We had Kim last week. We had, all our guests have been just really
amazing.
Talk to wonderful and so rich in history. You know, we go a long way back, and it's fun to go back and look at the past with them and through their eyes.
And might I say, Ma, I speak for Roses when I say this, that you even more tonight, like, you always informative and give us so much, and we forget sometimes that we on the show because we just listening in that. Beginning, it was even more this time. I was like, oh, okay, well, we got to come in. Can you go a little bit longer? You know, and you know what I'm saying? And so, the in the back, you back in the back because last week it wasn't there.
What the logo, okay,
it's back. Yeah, hey,
I'm trying, you know, to get it together and make it work right, you know. But y'all are a big part of the show, you know that, and I thank you for giving your talents the way you do. It's important to me, and when you have faith in people, there's always a moment when you go, oh, how's this going to go? And I that was like a moment, and then y'all had just taken the ball and ran with it. And Skills, I never know what the fuck he's doing. But it's always...
I would say it because he brought me this hat back from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
From DeSalvo. This is...
Jean-Baptiste Point DeSalvo.
Yes. I got kicked out of there, and I had to go to Thornton out in Harvey, but I went there for a year.
Well, the high school is named after him, but he's the founder of Illinois.
And did you know that they renamed Lakeshore Drive DeSable?
No, I didn't.
They did. They named it that now. I was just there 2 weeks ago, and I was like, what is DeSable? What is DeSable? It's like, oh, that's Lakeshore Drive now.
Well, he founded Chicago, and... very famous name, and like certain other names, his name has always been a demarcation of the boundaries between black and white neighborhoods. And DeSable let you know you in the hood. Just like now, if you go in the corner of Martin Luther King and Obama Drive, you cross one street, and you're right at the point where the city stops giving a fuck. They just have decided this is where we're going to keep the black people. And it's an honor, but it's one of those things that you have to pay attention to lest it become a white elephant and something not beneficial because you're not aware of why they name these streets the way they do. They know that if anything happens, then we just send troops to DeSable and Obama, and we know exactly where, and we, you know, cordon off up to Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And so, but I think it's important that every once in a while, you know, these tidbits are in my head and I have to share them. So let's do our 2-minute rant. I have a 2-minute rant and I'm going to make it personal. I bought a Samsung phone. I have been buying Samsung phones for years. I love the flip phone. Every year when they come out with a new one, I have bought a new one. And the most storage, the 1T phone, they don't carry it in the phone carriers, the T-Mobile and Verizon and stuff. You have to buy it direct. So I always buy it direct from Samsung. I got my phone, I opened it up, a black line appeared to took over the whole phone, and they gave me a runaround, sent me places. The tech that they sent me to say, oh, it's ruined, you need a new phone. I go back and tell them, they're like, no, you got to send it to us, we have to inspect it to make sure, blah, blah, blah. We went through that. And they came back and said it would cost me $600 because I caused the damage that they see. I did not cause any damage. I am not paying $600 to Samsung after I gave them my old phone and paid them for the new phone. I'm very disappointed in that. Where the fuck is the customer service? I've tried to talk to real people. I'm pretty sure I've only talked to AI people. I have not had any sympathy, any anything. And it's like, you know, they just expect me to be okay with being out of, these phones are $2,000 a piece. You expect me to be okay with being out of a phone that I bought July 16th. I got it July 24th. I had it for for 3 weeks before it malfunctioned. And it's out of warranty because it has damage that I guess I'm supposed to have done. I am upset. I am outraged. And I think, unfortunately, it's not just Samsung who behaves like this, but I don't have an example of a company who always does better. And I think that's a sad thing to say about where we are now, especially at the prices that we're expected to pay. Okay, that's my rant. Now, who wants to rant next?
Well, I go. First of all, man, your rant anger pushed us to the side.
Well,
it was like, woo, like, get over here.
You know she's angry. we went from 6 inches to 4 inches.
Yes, that whole room opened up. So look, I'm tired of neighbors, okay? I know we're supposed to have them, you know what I'm saying? But why do, especially as you get older, when I was younger, I loved neighbors, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to be around, but now I do not want to be around neighbors, especially the ones that stay over here. Y'all know where I stay at. And when I tell you it's these couple of neighbors, and I know they do this a lot, but these neighbors, they always just popping up every time I'm outside, like anywhere I go, and they always got questions for it. I don't talk to people. I'm nice. I have a smile. My smile says, "I leave me alone." But shouldn't speak to me and answer me questions. And then I hate when a person, if you do ask, answer them, now they want to, you know what I'm saying, ask you something else. Where you headed? To the store. Oh, where you going to get this dick in your nose?
I am
pound now, huh?
What I'm just saying is, I was in the jacuzzi my early tonight, and the person just popped out. Oh, you out here at the jacuzzi? Yes, I'm in the jacuzzi. But I hadn't seen, like, for 2 minutes, I didn't see them. They just popped up, and I'm like, neighbors.
Yeah, okay. That's righteous.
Okay, well, mine is very simple. My rant is, I cannot stand when people put their dick in my nose. I hate that so much. I mean, I'm trying to be a nice neighbor. I've just brought over some brownies, and now he wants to put his dick in my nose. And I think that is really rude. And so now I have a problem with neighbors too. And neighbors just want to go around putting their big old dick up my nose. Does this nostril look like it could fit a dick, especially Skills dick? Absolutely not. Put it in my mouth. Let's be practical.
Use the hypothetical dicks for this story.
Oh, it's rhetorical now. Oh, it's now your rhetoric.
It's a symbolic dick. Okay.
Anyway, you know, I was just saying, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to wipe that? You know what I'm saying?
Somehow talking to you guys always leads me here.
Is it secret because I don't want anybody to know, or is it secret because just I just hide it from people?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's your secret.
Well, I'll tell you what my big secret fear is that when I'm home alone, when my husband is not home and I'm in the bed and the whole house is dark, I'm afraid somebody has gotten in the house unbeknownst to me before I got home and were waiting like in the closet or under the bed to hurt me. And then, or like they were in the guest bedroom, and then once all the lights are out and everybody's quiet, then you just hear this voice from the other side of the house go, "I'm in your house. I'm coming to get you. Just hold still." And all I have to do is go through that scenario, and then I'm not sleeping for the rest of the night. I'm just like, I have such fear of somebody being in the house,
you know,
by myself.
I would suggest, because it sounds like a movie, I would suggest you write it down when you're in those waking moments where you can't go to sleep.
Yeah, the title of it will be, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God."
Yeah. Or, "I'm back in the closet." you know, what's your secret fear?
Oh, did I'm gonna shit on myself on stage? Like, literally, because it's been close, you know what I'm saying? And I'm thankful that the grips are still gripping.
That's a secret. That's a secret to keep to yourself.
Viewers,
who did you say the secret fear? I'm being vulnerable right now.
sorry.
Not discuss this in advance. I had no idea he was going to say that. And so I'm responsible for what he said. Just know that we're not surprised.
Secret, Ma. You said secret, so you didn't both know it.
But it's so you. That is a you answer. No one else would get that answer. And I had expected it. I love you. Anyway, my secret fear, I don't know if it's a big secret, but I am terrified of escalators. I do not like escalators.
We know this about you, actually. That's not a secret.
To ride escalators going up. I don't mind escalators going down. For some reason, I can see, and it's okay. But going up, and then the bigger the escalator, by the time I get to the top, I'm in full-blown panic attack. If we are traveling together and you go to the escalators, I am going to the elevator and we're going to have to meet up at the top. I cannot do it. And that's how I fell in love. Well, the first time Angie and I were out, and we were, I think it was when we went to Absinthe. That night she came to Vegas and we went there. And we were supposed to get on an escalator. And I told her I didn't like them. I'm scared. And she said, "It's okay. Just look at me." And she turned around and rode backwards and just said, "Just look at me. It's going to be okay." And so I did. And we got to the top. And that was the end of the conversation. She didn't mention it again. And I thought that was very sweet of her. Not to judge, not to ask questions, not to make fun. And that was the beginning of our relationship for real. I wanted to introduce a feature to our audience. I would love for you to tell me your stories. We all share a common history, but we all have a different perspective of it. And for so long, we only heard one perspective and we only heard from one segment of society. But now we have these wonderful tools where we can make TV at home. We can write history at home and publish it and put it out. It might not make money, but future generations will have stories from real people that tell what they see, how they feel. And nobody will be able to manufacture these fanciful stories around the bone they found. I was watching something tonight and they're like, this bone signifies that these people once attached a religious something. It's a fucking rock. It's a fucking bone. It means a bone. So the story and everything has always served as a propaganda.
That needs to be the title of this episode. It means a bone.
Fucking bone. And it comes from people putting themselves at the top and everybody else underneath, and their stories never get told. So tell yours. And if you want to share them with us, you know, just put them in the comments and tell your stories. I would love to hear them. Because, you know, I have a bucket list, which is to visit every African-American history museum site, whatever that exists in this country. And tonight I want to feature the trip we took to the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. We went not long after it opened. There were still things that were under construction. And we had a private tour, thankfully, the first night, and they took us around, and it's the most amazing museum. It's like seven stories, but it starts in the fourth stories down, and that's the beginning of the Atlantic slave trade, and it shows the progression of the slave trade in detail that I hadn't seen before in other places, and it's dark and oppressive, and it's depressing. There's so many, there's slave manifests there. It's just all kinds of remnants. And you know, you see that the ships left with 300 cargo and they arrived with 50. The horror, it's just, like I said, oppressive. And as you go up, different floors, you go through different times. So now you're in the 1600s. Now you're, and as you go higher, so you get to the fifth floor or the fourth floor where they have the Emmett Till exhibit, which is the only place you can't take pictures. You're more and more, you know, weighted. Once you come out of the Emmett Till thing, there's this beautiful serenity pool you can go and reflect and decompress. And you're so beaten up emotionally. And it's just, it's a mixture of all every emotion you can have. And you sit there with strangers and commiserate in silence and just commune. And then you go upstairs. And now you're in the 50s, then the 60s, 70s, 2000s. And the explosion of culture is so heart lifting. It's just, by the time you get to the seventh floor, you're damn right. We are badass. And you leave with such a renewed sense of self and identity that I just recommend that everybody go once. And they had at the time, I don't know if they still do, I want to go back, they had stations where you could tell your family story, whatever you wanted to tell, and they would investigate, and people made donations, Bibles with histories, you know, because you couldn't have your genealogy done, so people kept Bibles for generations, and they donated those things, and that's what I mean about telling your stories, because one day that story will be an almost invaluable document that will enrich somebody's understanding of who we are and how they came to be. So go to the Museum of African American History and Culture, and now we're at the point of the show where I ask you guys, what's going on in your lives? Where will you be working? What is your next week looking like, Stephen?
Well, tomorrow night I will be at couples counseling at 4 p.m. Oh, that's the wrong calendar. Hold on. I will be at the Hilarious 7 on Monday the 9th at 7 o'clock at Oyo Hotel. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, the 10th and 11th, I will be on Butch Bradley's Surviving Butch Bradley show at 11:30 at Jimmy Kimmel's, both on Tuesday and Wednesday. So be sure and check it out.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you for being here. I love you, man.
Oh, I love you too, Mom.
And skills, what you doing? What's coming up?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank Stephen for bringing this. Oh, I said that already, didn't I?
Sorry. Don't worry about it.
This Friday, well, I did say this. Thanks for killing it last week, birthday week. He killed it on the show last week, Mom.
Right.
Thank you.
This Friday, Jimmy Kimmel's at 11:30. Then Sunday and Monday at Jimmy Kimmel's with Lunell. And then next Saturday, I'm in L.A. And I'm going to take pictures, Mom. I'm performing at the place. It's called the Hidden Museum. I'm performing in L.A. is at the Hidden Museum. And that's next Saturday.
All right. Well, I look forward to those pictures. And hopefully we can share them. So...
where are you going to be?
I'm going to be in Sacramento at the Guild Theater. And I'm also doing a tea dance with the First Ladies of Disco Vegas at Myron's tell me again. What's the name of this theater?
The Smith Center.
The Smith Center.
Yes.
Okay. But I'll be there and in the ass starts at 3 o'clock. Martha Wash and the First Ladies of Disco show. Please, it's one of the most remarkable shows forever.
It's so much fun. You will be so glad you went.
Of youth, it's a fountain of youth. The audience, and it doesn't matter how old you are, it's just so much fun to watch so many people have so much fun. And I am so grateful that I get a chance to be part of the show. And next week's guests are very near and dear to my heart. Anybody who knows me knows that I worship Richard Pryor as not probably the greatest comedian ever, and the most certainly the greatest one I've ever known and been around. And his kids, Rain Pryor Vance and Richard Pryor Mason, or as he was known to me when I met him, Richard Jr., will be here. And we get to talk about Richard and get to find out what they're doing. They are both doing wonderful, and I am beyond jazzed that they will be here. So that's our show for tonight. Thank you both for being here. And I think it's time to say goodnight, Marcia. Goodnight, Marcia.
Goodnight, Marcia.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight.
Goodnight.
And be sure to like, comment, share.
Come
back again. We're going to keep getting better, and we're going to miss you if you don't come back.
Yes.
Bring your drink of choice. Have a little weed. Or don't. We don't care. Just come. Y'all come back now. You hear? Thank you. And good night.
She got a way, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back up.